Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens, at the heart of Irish homes for over 40 years. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
The Palestinian flag is flying over Leinster House today as Taoiseach Micheál Martin seeks government approval for the formal recognition by Ireland of the State of Palestine in a joint move alongside Norway and Spain. And this comes a day after meeting of EU foreign ministers where the Taoiseach said they discussed for the first time the prospect of sanctions against Israel if it does not comply with last Friday's order from the International Court of Justice. Now, for the very latest from Brussels, I'm joined on the line by Suzanne Lynch, Associate Editor at Politico. Good morning, Suzanne.
Good morning.
So, from Micheál Martin yesterday, this assertion that EU foreign ministers have for the first time, he says, engaged in a significant discussion on sanctioning Israel if it doesn't comply with the ICJ ruling. What more can you tell us about that and about the discussion he references?
Yes, that's certainly the case. We heard from officials here throughout the day that there was quite a significant conversation about this for the first time. You may remember that Ireland and Spain had written to Ursula von der Leyen, the head of the European Commission, back around February, calling for the Israel-EU association agreement, which governs trade between the two, for that to be assessed in some way to see if Israel complied with humanitarian law, that the clause in that agreement. Now, that had really got very little traction. But yesterday, we know that the foreign ministers did discuss this. Now, what happens next? Nothing has been decided as of yet, but they have decided to call a meeting of this of the Council of this association agreement between Europe and Israel to see if Israel is complying with these provisions. Now, we get the sense from some countries it's more the threat of this rather than actually, you know, ultimately pulling out of this agreement. That's very much on the cards at the moment. But in saying that, I think there was a real kind of change of mood here yesterday. And I think it's because of what was happening over the weekend in Rafah.
Yes, with that refugee camp and the 45 confirmed deaths so far. Now, the Taoiseach was very clear in saying that there are varying views amongst EU leaders on whether sanctions should happen or not. Do we know anything about that, about who's in favour and who isn't?
Well, I think one of the most significant interventions was yesterday, Emmanuel Macron, who wasn't at the meeting in Brussels. It was a foreign minister's meeting, and he was meeting his German counterpart in Germany. He tweeted that he was outraged by what had happened in Rafah. And around that time, we saw a wave of commentary from across European leaders. So we had the Italian defence minister, for example, saying that the Israeli military action is no longer justifiable with respect to Rafah. We had the German foreign minister, Annalena Baerbock, also saying that the ICJ ruling from last week is binding and must be complied with. And, you know, no hostage will be released, she was saying. She was bringing up the issue of Israeli hostages in Gaza. She said none of those will be released if people are, as she put it, intense burning. So I think the fact that we had this very strong language coming from senior people around Europe just when foreign ministers were meeting was one of the reasons why they had this substantive discussion.
But did any other foreign minister come out and talk publicly about sanctions, or was Micheál Martin alone there?
Well, the Belgian foreign minister did. She said that the Belgium welcomed the fact that they were talking, that they were going to call a meeting of the Israel European Association Agreement Council. So Belgium came out strongly on that. What will happen next now is that the EEAS, that's the European External Action Service that is headed by Borrell, which sits between the Commission and the Council, if you like, that now will most likely will start working on this, essentially, and come forward with some proposals. But as I say, it would be, you know, a long time before we get to that point, I would say. But whether this is used as a threat to restrain Israel, I think that's really what's going to happen in the immediate future as this Rafah crisis continues.
And on the specific issue of sanctions, what has Israel been saying in response?
Israel has been, I mean, it came out of the traps yesterday, and once this international outrage began to sweep across the world, and it said that, you know, that this was an accident, that this was not meant to happen. They were trying to strike the Hamas militants in that camp in Rafah. But the very fact that Netanyahu came out publicly there in the parliament and had to make this defence, I think, shows how under pressure now he is feeling. I mean, I think it was significant, too, that there were some of the Arab leaders, including from the Palestinian territories, had been invited to this EU meeting and meetings that have been taking place and are continuing to take place today. I think that also gave a different complexion to the discussion. I mean, there was also discussions about Ukraine, but the very fact that this issue dominated really the news agenda, the discussion, is an indication that I think things have changed within the EU over the last few weeks, particularly with this Rafah invasion.
Mm-hmm. And all of this, of course, relates to the International Court of Justice. And Micheál Martin raised the issue of the independence of that body and also the International Criminal Court.
Yes, and I mean, I think it's significant, for example, that the German foreign minister said, you know, Israel needs to comply with this. In the last few days, we had a statement from the EAS, that this foreign policy part of the EU, which they would need to get agreement from all countries for the statement, saying, you know, standing by this, saying that the ICJ is the highest court of the UN system, that all member states have the obligation to comply with its decisions, all EU member states are bound to them, and states can't disregard this rules-based world order. So there was obviously a more of a meeting of minds around this. That is, whether sanctions against Israel for not complying with the ICJ could be separate, if you like, to the association agreement discussions is probably something that is being looked at now. Now, of course, the Israelis are disputing the wording or saying they've a different interpretation of the wording of this ICJ ruling, saying, you know, they're not saying that it doesn't prohibit military action per se. That's what they say. Mm-hmm. But it's about, you know, causing undue death and genocide, which they say they're not doing. So, you know, they're arguing around the wording of that judgment. But it was very clear where the EU stands on that.
And Suzanne, on the day when Ireland, Spain and Norway formally recognise the state of Palestine today, is there any indication that other nations will follow suit? I know there was talk of Britain, Australia, Malta, Slovenia. There were indications that they might in recent months. But today, this formal recognition, does it move that on in any way?
I think it continues the pressure on this issue and the very fact. Now, I think Sanchez gave a relatively brief statement this morning, but I do think that it is, you know, it is hugely significant that these countries have done this at this moment. And I think it will keep the pressure on. Now, again, I think the big focus here, though, the interesting country to watch in all this is France. Macron is trying to tread a fine line, but there were protests in Paris last night, for example, about this Rafah invasion. They have said more or less that they're not against it in principle, recognising the state of Palestine, just not now. But I think they're maybe the country to watch here, and that, you know, they hold huge weight, huge diplomatic clout, and I don't think it's going to happen any time at all soon in Germany. But France, I think, is one to watch, and how politically Macron comes under pressure here. His party is not doing well in the polls ahead of the European elections, for example. So I think that's one to watch, and whether any direction from Paris on this could encourage other smaller countries to go that route also.
Suzanne, thank you for bringing us the latest on that. That's Suzanne Lynch, who's Associate Editor at Politico. Well, the Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has vowed to continue the war against Hamas amid international condemnation of that airstrike that killed scores of Palestinians in Rafah on Sunday. Alistair Bunkle is Sky News Middle East correspondent, and he joins me on the line. Good morning, Alistair.
Good morning, Claire.
So, Alistair, there has been widespread shock and revulsion at this attack on the refugee camp in Rafah. We've heard the response from Israel. They say they're investigating what happened. But can you give us a sense of the reaction in Israel to the deaths of at least, we believe, in the main 45 women, children and elderly people?
Well, I think the reaction is split. There is undoubtedly shock and dismay at what has happened. There is a sizable part of the Israeli population who do see the pictures coming from Gaza and can't fail to be shocked about it. And you know, because there's a sizable part of the Israeli population who are putting pressure on the Israelis to come to a ceasefire. Having said that, there is another section of the population here who would say, you know, these things happen in war. Civilian casualties, however unfortunate, are a part of any conflict. And they back Benjamin Netanyahu's defiance to continue fighting in Rafah and in Gaza, whatever the cost, in order to try and eliminate Hamas.
Mm-hmm. But you've been writing yourself today that there have been many potential turning points in the war. You say every time Israel has remained determinedly on that path that it has set to destroy Hamas. But looking at this incident on Sunday, could it be a turning point?
It could. The only reason I hesitate is because there's been a number of occasions, which I wrote, there's been a number of occasions during the last 8 months where, as an observer, but also a journalist reporting this war, you think, well, surely this now is a moment where things will change. The course of the war will go in a different direction. And yet rarely has that happened. And it just speaks to the very single-minded determination, not of just Netanyahu, but of the war cabinet, of the Israeli government, the wider government, to totally eliminate Hamas. And they seem prepared and willing to do so, regardless of the consequences, regardless of what allies might say, think, or do. So I suppose the question for me is, seeing what we saw in Rafah, if this is going to be a turning point, what needs to happen to persuade Benjamin Netanyahu to go down a different course altogether?
Mm-hmm. You touched there on the allies' response, and that has also changed. The EU, we hear, is discussing sanctions. Germany has condemned the attack, and we heard a little earlier, there is a possibility now that France may join Ireland, Spain and Norway in recognising the state of Palestine formally. Will that have any impact on what Israel is doing?
I don't think statements will. I mean, I was quite taken aback, actually, by how forthright Emmanuel Macron was yesterday describing his outrage at the attacks. I don't think statements are going to change the Israeli course. Now, sanctions might. That is quite something. Whether or not the EU could find unanimity there is something else. But, I mean, if there were sanctions against Israel, possibly because the EU is Israel's largest trading partner. So for Israel, that could be very costly indeed. What the Americans decide to do can also influence Israeli actions. As for France recognizing Palestine as an independent state, as the Irish have done, Spanish and the Norwegians, I'm not sure that would be enough to change the Israelis either. It would anger them. They would, as we've seen with those three countries, they, I'm sure, would take some sort of punitive action against them. But as I have said, I think the determination on the behalf of Benjamin Netanyahu to carry on through with this for various reasons, not just because he wants to eliminate Hamas, but, you know, for his own legacy, no doubt, as well, for his own political survival, his determination is so rigid that it would take a lot, I think, to bring Israel to a ceasefire, a permanent ceasefire.
So in a way, that brings us back around to the Americans, isn't it? I mean, are we saying that it will take the Americans, you know, making a major shift in their policy on Israel in order to effect change because of all those factors that you just mentioned, in particular, the political pressure on Benjamin Netanyahu?
The Americans are always key, although we've all been rather taken aback by how little influence Washington seems to have had at points during this war. There was always an assumption that as soon as the Americans have said, right, enough's enough, the Israelis follow. That just has not been the case throughout this war. So yeah, it would take a significant policy shift. We've already seen sort of elements of that by the threat to withhold arms sales. I think that would have to happen on a far larger basis. I think we will see at some point the UN Security Council vote on the ruling from the International Court of Justice last week, which ordered Israel to halt its operations. I think the Security Council will have its say at some point soon. What do the Americans decide to do there? Will they vote in favor of the International Court? Will they vote in favor of Israel by vetoing it? we'll have to see. But that could be a pretty clear sign from Washington. But the Americans are slightly tying themselves in knots here. They have given a red line. That red line is a major military operation in Rafah. Did Sunday night's events cross that red line? Well, at the moment, from what we're hearing from Washington, it didn't. It was a tragic incident. The pictures were horrific, but it doesn't look as though the Americans are regarding that as a crossing of their red line. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, they will be acutely aware of how other Western nations are reacting to this, and they will not want to be seen to be isolated in their support for Israel.
Alistair, on the humanitarian aid side, we know the Americans have their floating pier, which they say is running now. Is that making a difference? I mean, it was never meant to replace what was coming in through the border crossing with Egypt, but is it working? Is it helping people?
Not really. Until late last week, the Americans admitted, the Pentagon admitted, that none of the aid that had gone onto that pier had then made it to people inside Gaza. I think that situation has changed, but really not by much. I mean, some trucks are sort of now starting to deliver aid. Any truck is obviously is good news. But when I say it's not really making much difference, at the moment it is not delivering what was promised, and that is around 150 truck loads a day for the people of Gaza, which would have been a significant and a complementary aid provision to the land borders, to airdrops. But don't forget, you've also got the Rafah border crossing, which is still closed because of the military operation going on there. Mm-hmm. There has been, if you're looking for some good news, there's been an agreement between the Israelis and the Egyptians, brokered by the Americans, to get some of the aid on the Egyptian side to bring it round the corner to Kerem Shalom, which is the Israeli crossing, and get it across there. But no, the aid has dipped off in quite a concerning way.
And the American system with that floating pier, it's likely to be impeded by the fact that there has been intense fighting in the north. So aid organisations, I'm sure, will be extremely careful about travelling in that situation.
Exactly. It's one thing getting ships sail from Cyprus to a dock about 2 kilometres offshore, then get, you know, US military ships to take it a couple of hundred metres offshore, then get lorries to take it onto the sort of the beachhead, because that can be done in a relatively secure and benign environment. But then putting it onto trucks and taking it into the neighbourhoods, particularly northern Gaza, is much harder because there is a lot of fighting going on. Jabalia refugee camp has been very, very intense fighting, and elsewhere in northern Gaza as Hamas have re-emerged. And so it is not straightforward, as has been the case throughout the entire war, but it remains a very precarious situation for the aid agencies trying to deliver that aid.
Alistair, thank you very much for your time. That's Alistair Bunkle, Sky News Middle East correspondent.
Thanks, Claire.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.